You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hey there, John McWhorter. Welcome to the Glenn Show.
Good to be back, Glenn. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's good to be talking to you. I'm doing well. This is Glenn Lowry of Brown University and BloggingHeads.tv. Talking to my conversation partner, John McWhorter of Columbia University. We have an ongoing conversation, and I'm sure our audience want to hear from us, John, on the latest developments on the front of race, justice, and inclusion in America today. It's the topic du jour. So, for example, and John, I'm just trying to solicit your wisdom on these questions. There's a controversy that has broken out. Bernard Sanders was asked a question about whether he supported Bernard Sanders, presidential candidate, Democratic Socialist reparations, and he said that he didn't think it was feasible to get through Congress and that it was divisive, so the answer was no, in effect. And he was taken to task by one Ta-Nehisi Coates, also topic du jour, Mr. Coates is the spokesman for a certain view about racial issues. I'll shut up in a moment, John, because I know you have a lot to say. But in any case, Coates says most of Sanders' portfolio of policies are not going to get through Congress. He's a Democratic Socialist, after all. I wonder why it is that he can't see his way clear to supporting reparations for Black people. Maybe it's because he doesn't really have a full commitment to doing justice for Black people, not to paraphrase, but I just did, Ta-Nehisi Coates. So there's a controversy, John, one among a number of racial controversies simmering these days, and just thought I'd get the benefit of your wisdom on this.
Well, I guess when it comes to that issue, the way Coates put it was that Bernie Sanders is not committed to battling white supremacy. And that is a way of saying in today's climate that somebody is, or let me put it a different way. You can say about the same person these days that they are a racist. The appellation racist is now applied even to somebody who you would in another mood say is not sufficiently committed to fighting white supremacy. And I felt that that was a pretty uncharitable and extreme place to go when you're talking about a committed socialist like Sanders. I mean, Sanders is of a certain age, so much of a certain age, that I don't think that the race thing matters to him that much. He just thinks of it as a matter of class. To accuse a person like that in acrid tones of, and okay, let's be careful. You're more careful than I am. I'm in a careful mood today. Coates didn't say he's a white supremacist. He said that he's not sufficiently committed to battling white supremacy. But frankly, we're splitting hairs. We know what the flavor of that is supposed to be. I thought, no, that's too much. And we have said in these discussions that my previous policy was, frankly, to never mention Ta-Nehisi Coates. And you've gotten me to the point where I'm comfortable actually saying his name and writing down his
name. John, you've grown. You've matured. I'm glad to see it.
It's taken me a lot of deep breaths to allow myself to do it. But here's one case where I thought, you know what? And this is not to make it sound like I'm, you know, particularly important. But I thought, being Black, I am one of the only people these days who is going to call Coates out in direct terms. I'm not going to come out with pillow bats. I'm going to say exactly what I think. And, you know, you can call me all sorts of things, but you're not going to call me a racist. And I thought, I know what people must be thinking about what he's saying about Sanders, but let's face it, most of the white commentariat aren't.
They won't say it.
And so it was late. It was 11 p.m., and I'm groggy at 11 p.m. I have two small kids, but I thought, I'm dashing this off. So I wrote a piece for CNN where I just said, not fair. This isn't right. And my basic point was that the case for reparations is not cut and dried. It's not as if it's obvious and that therefore if Sanders doesn't like it, you can start calling him names. And you know what surprised me? I'm almost done. On Twitter, you know, which I carefully did not read for about a week because I can imagine the sort of swill that came through from Coates' fans, that piece got more loves, like with a little heart, than I've ever got for anything on Twitter. You know, some people are going to say, well, it was just a bunch of racists. But, you know, I've taken some peeks. It was not just a bunch of racists. I think I said something that a lot of white people felt they weren't allowed to say. And a couple of people told me, including that the editor at CNN was very careful. And usually he's pretty liberal with me. So that happened. And I'm glad I said it, and the world is going to keep spinning. But I think that I felt like it's my job to say what everybody else is thinking, which is really what my whole race commentary career has been. So that was my last.
Okay, so can I give you my candid reaction, John?
Mm-hmm.
Which is not about the substance of Bernie Sanders, Ta-Nehisi Coates reparations. In a way, it's about you, my beloved friend.
Uh-oh.
And oh, well, no, it's not negative. It's but I'm amused. I must say that I'm amused because it's clear to me, with respect, that one, Ta-Nehisi Coates has gotten under your skin a little bit, my brother.
Partly your fault.
Yeah, well, I mean, I must have provoked it somehow. But we're talking about him. He's still sort of setting the stage, setting the agenda and whatnot. Now, you have just described yourself as almost a lone wolf in being among African Americans, willing to call him out and so forth and so on. And you were talking about your 11 p.m., you know, you had to write a piece, CNN, you got more hearts than you ever got before because you took him down a peg and whatnot. And I'm just smiling because it's still focused on him. I mean, you know, it's kind of like what do they say? Bête noir? Is that the phrase? What is it? You know, you know, so there's a kind of polarity thing going on here. I mean, you're married to this guy. You're stuck like to the tar, baby. I'm not sure what the right metaphor is. No matter what you do, you're in it, you know, with TNC, John. I'm sorry.
It's your fault. You're the one who's got me to the point where I end up thinking about him more than I used to. Because, you know, our original idea was you were railing about him. And my thought was, no, partly because he and I have a bad history. And I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to give more attention to his ideas than I thought one should. But I've come to realize from you that to not say anything is almost to allow yourself to be silenced. And I think that as Black writers, we have a responsibility, because I think we've both seen, and I've certainly seen over the past few months, that there's a certain kind of white writer who is scared to death of being called a racist, maybe if not by him, then by his fans. You are not supposed to take that man's name in vain. And I don't think of him as a bet in any way, but well, I think none of us are perfect.
Here's the thing that I think, and you know, people are going to call me an elitist. I think that the whole level of argument is so lightweight. I mean, it's not deep historical. It's not deep philosophical or ethical. It's not deep in terms of the social scientific understanding. Nobody talks about causality. Nobody relates it to any kind of literature. When I say nobody, I'm talking about the journalist who writes quickly and well, Ta-Nehisi Coates, and who has a shtick, with respect, I mean, if I can say this with respect, of calling people into a certain kind of register of guilt around the historical racial overhang or whatever. And people allow themselves to be influenced by that. But what I'm saying is, where's the kind of deep analysis? I mean, we're here in the 21st century. We're beset with problems that have been over us for 50 years. We hardly ever get beyond slogans, reparations for slavery against Africans. We're in the 21st century, man. We're talking 150 years. This is a multiracial country. We had an immigration liberalization in the 1960s that has brought tens upon tens of millions of non-European persons and their families and their descendants into the country. These problems in the inner cities fester. People are throwing tantrums. They're able to make, you know, kind of moral passion play performances, but nobody seems to be cutting through to the real deal of what's actually going on. So I mean, we have serious scholarly disciplines that are concerned about these matters, but they seem to have withdrawn. And I'll stop. I know I'm ranting. But I look at my universities, where the students are raising all kinds of questions about justice, and I hear almost nothing from the philosophy department or the ethics or the people who actually are. I hear from the Afro-American Studies Department or the Indigenous Studies Department about these claims, but I don't hear from the serious heavyweights. So people are going to call me an elitist, but I'm bemused that people take Ta-Nehisi Coates seriously. That's my bottom line. My friend John McWhorter is upset because of the way people are reacting. I can get that because it does seem to be a little bit of, but people are acting, I'm talking about serious people, serious people are acting as if he's got something important to say about the depth of these issues. And I don't see it. Again, they're going to call me an elitist. I've said it for the third time, but there you are.
People have given up. I think that what this, there's this caricature of the white intelligentsia person that we're using, and I don't mean to caricature, but it is human to generalize. I think there's a certain kind of thinking white person who gives up. The race debate is so frustrating. It never seems to stop. I think they can understand black grievance, but then on the other hand, there's a part of them that thinks, when do you get over it? They listen to a certain kind of person or read a certain kind of black person who says that if you think that, then you are part of the problem. And they don't know what to think. They don't know where to go. And so the response is to read or listen to somebody who's very articulate about black despair and to nod vigorously and to figure, this is the best that I can do. And I think that also means that if somebody expresses that viewpoint artistically, and so they're good in a literary kind of way, and we can argue about whether or not he's as good as James Baldwin, et cetera, but he certainly is, has an art way with the pen. And I think people think, the art matters as much as the logic. And so the idea is not whether somebody's making a point, but are they making it in a way that has heart? And as understandable as I find that perspective, I think it's a sign of people who've just given up. They figure, we can't work it out logically anymore. There doesn't seem to be any solution. And so why don't we just pull back and assess it as art? But what it means is that you and I are well aware that Coates's work has been treated with respectful criticality over the past few months, but it's only in places that a certain kind of person will look. And so you'll get it in the National Review, you'll get it in commentary. It's not that he hasn't been touched, but it's that if you're talking about the mainstream media, now, of course, The Nation is not going to criticize him in any way, but if you're talking about what's in the sort of left of middle, you're not supposed to say anything except hosannas.
Well, there have been some critical reviews. John, there, who is the Melvin Rogers is the political philosopher at UCLA who had a in The Atlantic, the symposium that The Atlantic ran on the book, had what I thought was a pretty critical assessment, basically saying that Coates doesn't leave any room for African-American agency. There's a guy called Chatterton Williams. I think I'm forgetting his first name, Chatterton. It may be Robert Chatterton Williams. In any case, he's another African-American philosophically trained writer who lives in Paris, who had something in the London Review of Books that was relatively critical. You saw what Cornel West, or maybe you didn't see what Cornel West said at his Facebook page, which then became famously viral, taking Coates down and taking Toni Morrison down a peg for likening Coates to Baldwin. Adolph Reed, the African-American political scientist at Penn, who writes about racial issues, had, I think, a very effective, from the left, critical assessment of Coates's criticisms of Sanders. And, you know, we could go into details of these criticisms, but I take your point about those the mainstream media, the from leading David Brooks to Charles Blow and everybody in between, pretty much being on the same page about this guy. But let me just say one more thing, because if I may, which is...
Well, before you do, let me ask you a question. With the Atlantic Symposium, which you've caught me out, frankly, I was still in my phase of I refused to engage this. I didn't read it. Was the general tone really that of this is a highly questionable piece of writing? Or was it really Coates is a genius, absolutely wonderful, wonderful, but one must say on the side? Because I would imagine.
An overdue welcome, brilliantly stated, powerful, essential, and all these kind of things. I mean... Yeah. Those were, I mean, that's how you get a National Book Award. That's how you get a MacArthur Genius Prize and so forth.
Criticism was apparent.
The cognoscenti think this about what you're doing. I just wanted to circle back to, you know, you say people have given up. I think that's basically right. And I think the implications are wider than just this particular individual. I think we stand in solidarity with Ms. U movement on campuses. And I think to a certain degree, Black Lives Matter, in terms of the way it's framed, people have given up. When I say given up, I mean the books of the dead. This is Mitchell Andrews' unresolved homicide cases from New Orleans that he confronts Coates with out at the Aspen Ideas Festival. And Coates basically responds, yeah, niggas are killing niggas, but there ain't nothing wrong with black people that ending white supremacy wouldn't fix. Why are you blaming the people who are the victims of the overhang of racism or whatever? People have given up. You don't know what to say about homicide rates of the character that they are and whatnot. What are you going to say? But I think the surrender is much broader than that. I mean, let's take another example, Silicon Valley. Okay, so diversity in Silicon Valley. So companies have to do better. They're all trying to do better. They have programs. They all, I'm out here. I'm talking to these people. They have programs. They have initiatives. They have consultancies. They have, experts coming in. They're all trying to do better. And here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, well, there aren't any blacks at Caltech. Why should I be surprised that there aren't any blacks in Silicon Valley? Okay, by which I mean to say, they're trying to liberalize the immigration laws to import more intellectual talent from South Asia. I'm talking about engineers and people can write code and whatnot like that. Those people aren't white. They just want talent. You're telling me they're turning away black talent? I doubt it very seriously. Now, will there be a microaggression around the coffee machine if a black person goes to work at a company where everybody is white? Probably.
Probably the more
Does
than one.
that amount to anything much? No, it doesn't. The real issue here is there aren't any blacks at Caltech. Well, we've given up. We've given up even thinking that we can solve that problem, and so it gets swept under the rug, and don't want to discuss it. What I'm trying to say is, I think your point that the sheer tragic weight of the failure in the post-1960 environment of accommodating in any kind of really integrative way African American, the sheer weight of it is such that people are just intellectually, just sort of stunned, and they're not, because these are not difficult and it just seeps into everything. So I don't know if you're ready to shift gears to talk about the Oscars or not, but I want to talk about whiteout. I want to talk about the boycott. I mean, imagine that you were Chris Rock. Chris Rock has to actually, moderate this thing. He's black. He's a comedian. He's a social critic. I know he's got something to say. I'm not going to presume to know where he's coming out. But the pressure will be on him to denounce the Academy for being, a place where black people don't get any respect. And I find it really deeply, deeply ironic, because if they're so racist, why do you want their respect? I
Right.
mean, it's this whole kind of lobbying to be honored. You didn't honor me enough. I demand that you honor me more. I mean, I know you're a racist bunch of old white guys, but I'd still like you to give me that Oscar, because even though the fact that I'm not represented in there devalues the Oscar, I'm still turning to you to try to tell me that I'm great. I mean,
You know where that's going. It's interesting. I've been asked to write about the Oscars controversy many times, and I've just said no. I had a hard time coming up with something to say that I felt would be at all original, because the only thing I can think of is what I'm going to say now, which I don't think is worth writing. It's better said, which is that it's interesting. I've only won, except for one thing that happened when I was 10, I've only won one prize in my life. I've only been given one award. And it was 12 or 15 years ago when I was annoyed that I didn't get a teaching award at Berkeley for my linguistics teaching, because I felt that I was working hard at it, and quite frankly, I was extremely popular. And instead, the teaching award went to somebody else who,
Oh.
popular for different reasons. And for whatever it's worth, there was no race involved in this. The
Yeah.
other person who got the award was one of the whitest people in the world. But I, you know, he and I were, we had come into the department at about the same time. I didn't like it. And I complained. I said, how come he gets the award and I don't? And so, they gave it to me. Next year, they gave it to me. And it was quite clear that the award was not heartfelt. They wouldn't have given it to me if I hadn't asked. There were things about the other guy that they valued more than they valued me. It's neither here nor there. And, I felt like a fool. I don't think of that as a real award. I wish I had not made them go through that. It wasn't worth it. This Oscars business is the exact same thing. And so you can tell what's coming. What's going to happen is that obviously the Academy has seen the error of its ways to an extent and is changing its representation. And we're going to get bendings over backward to give awards to people who wouldn't have been given awards before, but who you can't help thinking now don't necessarily deserve them, because every year there aren't going to necessarily be a critical mass of black people who deserve the awards, because there are only so many black people. We still remain a minority. And so, for example, Selma, for example, Selma was a great piece of work. It was a very fine TV movie, really. I mean, they did a solid job. It wasn't important cinema. As far as I was concerned,
to be offended that it didn't get more awards didn't make sense, because there have been many much more interesting films about the black experience than Selma, which was really just kind of a just the facts, ma'am, very good job. I don't want to see more of that, but I'm afraid we're going to. Did you see Jada Pinkett's the message to black America, basically saying that it is beneath us to beg? I have to admit, I agreed with her completely on that one. Not to mention that I never thought the Oscars were important anyway. I mean, maybe I'm missing something about what's important about being granted awards. You and I have had that conversation about ourselves, but it's a shallow ceremony that's based as much on the commercial as the artistic. And I would not consider it a mark against me if I were somebody who worked in the film industry and I wasn't getting Oscars. It seems more about dresses and money than anything else. But maybe saying that because I'm not an actor. Or
yeah, I think most actors don't mind getting an Oscar. Oscar award-winning actor XYZ sounds pretty good to me. I mean, it's got to be worth something.
It's probably worth money for one.
But I think the sort of subtleties of recognition, distinction, honor, and award, so you say Selma was kind of overrated. I'm not a film expert. I couldn't disagree with you about that. I wasn't wowed. I was interested in the subject matter. That's what kind of drew me in. The filmmaking, the script writing, the acting, such as it was. But what I want to say is it was powerful in a way because it was about something that was powerful. It was that moment was coming to the big screen, that period in American history and African American history was now being made into its iconographic representation, on the silver screen and whatnot. So if people need to get $100 million or whatever it takes to make a movie like that together, and the studios, because they've had enough Holocaust movies, right? I mean, there've right. been a lot of, there's certain themes that are going to be resonant and that, people are going to turn to. Oh, by the way, I just want to mention, people always want to play this ethnic card. There are not enough blacks, a blackout, a blackout, a blackout. Are they counting the Jews? Are there too many Jews? I just wonder how many Jews are making movies? How many Jews are getting Oscars? How many Jews are behind the studios? How many Jews are the directors? How many Jews are the script writers? I'm saying all of that. I hope it's understood. Not because I care how many Jews are, but because I'm saying the cast of mind that counts the blacks is not all that dissimilar from the cast of mind that counts the Jews. If they're too few of some people, maybe they're too many of some other people. The conversation is so dishonest. You think this is a civil rights problem? This is a discrimination problem? Like, neighborhoods are segregated, the movies are segregated. Come on, movies get made in a particular way. That industry has a history. Are we prepared to talk about it? Who's got the money? who's got the money? Who's going to the bank? I mean, I, for different reasons than you, can't get all that exercised about this. Not because I don't think the Oscars matter. I do watch the show, and my son, who's a movie buff, can tell you who won every Oscar in every category going back 30 years. So I reckon that they kind of do matter. But I think this is, in a world in which you've got so many people in prison who are African American, in which the poverty rates are what they are, in which there are no blacks at Caltech, and so forth and so on, to have this come out as the kind of indicator of it. And there is a certain irony because you're asking an industry to honor you, which is in a way honoring the industry.
Right.
Your opinion of me matters. That's the reason why I'm upset that you haven't honored me yet. And that's a very delicate kind of argument to make effectively. I don't know if people are aware of all the ironies that are running around in there.
You know how I would stage manage this? And I guess that's just not the way social history works. It's interesting. I guess I'm just old enough to remember it. Well, in the 80s, it was not enough movies about black people get made at all. And then that started, the blaxploitation business was just a quick splash. And those were rather silly movies for the most part. By the 80s, Spike Lee was a godsend. And so you have something like She's Gotta Have It that the whole country actually sees. And so you couldn't say anymore that black movies aren't made. Because even by the early 90s, it was getting hard to see every black movie. I used to try. And by about 92, it was just such a flood that I couldn't even keep up with it by renting the videos. Then it became, well, you don't see the middle class black experience. It's all these movies about ghetto people in New Jack City. Then that started changing. And so by the mid-aughts, you couldn't make that argument anymore. There were plenty of middle-class black people in movies. And so then the argument being made by many of the same people we've heard from over the past month was, well, there aren't producers that can green light a film who are black. There aren't enough black directors. Well, you know, here we are. 10 years later, there are such producers. There are such directors. So now the new thing is, well, we don't get enough Oscars. And that argument is being made with the same blood-curdling indignation that the argument about there not being enough black movies, period, is. Whereas it seems to me that really when we're arguing we don't get, and it's not that we don't get any, it's that we don't get enough Oscars. That to me seems to be less of a problem than we can't get a movie made, or that all the movies are about thugs, or that we can't make the movies ourselves. It's all a sign of progress in a way. And which is why the whole Oscars controversy leaves me a little bit perplexed in terms of its tone. I understand the basic complaint, but the idea that it just shows that we haven't come nearly as far as we'd like to think doesn't work for me, because we've come hugely far. If you think about what it was like to go to the movies in 1980 as a black person, we've come hugely far. It's at the point where it's smaller things that are the problem.
Well, 12 Years a Slave, I'm thinking of that film, which was very powerful and very widely celebrated. I don't know how it did at the Oscars. It must have won something somewhere along the line, but I don't know that stuff.
Tabulate the Oscars.
And now the Sundance Festival has just been swept by this new film, Birth of a Nation, with the ironic title, taking the D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation, which was, you know, that racist narrative about the, you know, taking the southern side of Reconstruction argument. So now we've got Nat Turner's Slave Rebellion being depicted. These are slaves who take up arms and are effective at killing a certain number of white people until they finally all get hunted down and executed. Birth, and it's titled provocatively Birth of a Nation. I mean, we do get the double entendre, right? We do get it, right? One of the first pieces of master filmmaking is a racist tract by D.W. Griffith that's actually screened at the White House, is it not? By
Woodrow Wilson calls it history written with lightning, and also true. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, here in the 21st century, 100 years later, almost to the day, we get Birth of a Nation celebrating the slave rebellion. Birth of a Nation? Was a nation being born at that moment? The African-American political sensibility was going to, because they were finally taking up arms and fighting for our freedom, which we've been fighting for the last 150, whatever. And it won everything, did it not, at Sundance? And
I assume that especially given the current climate, it will be winning more than that next year. But then the new thing, and there's actually a piece that's really gotten around from last week, and I must admit, I don't remember the name of the writer. It's a woman writer, but I think her first name begins with S, which is basically, I'm tired of films about slavery.
And so I haven't seen that.
Too much slavery. And the problem with that is, if you don't have films about slavery, then there's a certain kind of person who says you're denying the sins of the past. If you make films about slavery, then that same kind of person in the office next door says that you're denying that there's still problems now. Now, of course, if you strike a balance, then I'm sure that there are other kinds of complaints you can make. But there seems to be a certain basic idea that one must be indignant about something. Maybe that's called being a critical, intelligent person. Maybe that's just the way it's supposed to be. But sometimes I feel like there are people who won't be satisfied unless they can be grievously upset about black people in the movies. I don't know where it goes, is the problem.
Well, the movies are pop culture. Pop culture is on everybody's mind, so if you've got an axe to grind, that would be a place to grind it, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Anyway, John, I don't know. I think we probably alienated much of the audience with our predictably anti-zeitgeist race opinions.
We did our jobs. I would like to alienate more, except we're recording this on a weekend, and I have little girl responsibilities that I've got to go take care of.
Yes, Blogging Heads Land, John has, you know, served beyond the call of duty here, man. I mean, he's
only the second time we've done a weekend. That's right.
He's a father of young children. He's got to go take care of them. Thank you, John, very much for coming on the Glenn Show. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Glenn. I'll be back.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Blogging Heads TV. You can help support this content by remembering to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to all Blogging Heads episodes or to a specific program by going to our subscribe page at bloggingheads.tv/subscribe. There you can sign up for podcast downloads via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can subscribe to our email and we'll send you an alert every time we post a new episode.